you could? Glennis asked. Rebuild the city for yourselves? We never discussed what we'd do, Asterin said. If we could ever go home. A plan, perhaps, Glennis mused, would be wise. A powerful thing to have. Her blue eyes settled on Manon. Not just for the Krokins, but your own people. Dorian nodded, though he was not a part of this conversation. Who did the 13, the Iron Teeth, and Krokins wish to be, to build as a people? Manon opened her mouth, but the shadows burst into the ring of their hearth, their faces tight. The 13 were instantly on their feet.
We scouted ahead, to the rendezvous site.
Etta panted. Manon braced herself. A whisper of power flickered through the camp. The only indication that Dorian's magic had coiled around them in a near impenetrable shield.
It reeks of death, Briar finished.
Chapter 33. They had been too late. Not just by an hour or a day. No. Judging by the state of the bodies in the leaf-strewn clearing 20 miles south, the week they had been delayed had cost the Eelway warband everything. Morath had left the warriors where they lay, a few red-caped Krokins, the ones who had summoned their northern sisters here, amongst the fallen. The smell of decay was enough to make Manon's eyes water as they surveyed what had been left. She had done this, brought this about, in delaying the Krokins through that skirmish. One look at Dorian, the king lingering at the edge of the clearing with an arm over his nose to ward against the reek. And she knew he thought it, too. The sharpness in his eyes spoke enough.
Some got away,
Etta announced, the shadow's face grim.
But most didn't.
They wanted survivors,
Bronwyn said, loud enough for all to hear.
To sow fear.
Manon studied the shattered trees, the ancient oaks as broken as the bodies on the forest floor. Proof of who exactly had been responsible for the massacre. She had done that, too. Bronwyn said, voice cold and low.
What mortal band could ever hope to survive an attack by one of the Iron Teeth legions? Especially when that aerial legion was trained by such a skilled wing leader.
Choose your words carefully, Asterin warned. But Una, the pretty brown-haired Krokin and another of Manon's cousins, gripped her silver-bound broom and said,
You trained them, all of you. You trained the witches who did this.
Una pointed to the decaying bodies, the torn throats, the killing that had not stopped at quick deaths. Not at all.
And you expect us to forget that?
Silence fell, even from Asterin. Glennis said nothing. Manon's hands turned frail, foreign, the iron within them brittle. She had done this. The soldiers in the wide clearing were nothing and no one to her. Most were mere mortals, and yet. A woman lay near Manon's boots, her torso split clean open from navel to sternum. Her brown eyes gazed unseeingly at the shattered canopy overhead, her mouth still gaping in pain.
I can burn them.
Dorian offered no one in particular. Who had she been, the warrior before her? Who had she fought for? Not kingdoms or rulers, but who in her life had been worth defending?
We should alert the king and queen of Eelway,
Bronwyn was saying.
Warn their princes, too. Tell them to lie low. Erewhon is beyond taking prisoners.
Manon stared and stared at the slaughtered warrior. What she had once delighted in, what she had once flaunted before the world and done with not a shred of regret, only with the wish that her grandmother would approve, that the Iron Teeth would approve. This was what they would be remembered for, what she would be remembered for. Erewhon's crowned rider. His wing leader.
Don't burn them,
Manon said. Silence fell in the clearing. But Manon knelt on the festering earth, unsheathed her iron nails, and began digging.
Yanking off her gloves, Astarine lowered herself to the ground nearby. Then Sorrel and Vesta. Then the rest of the 13. The cold, firm earth did not yield easily. It tore at Manon's fingers, root and rock burning as they scraped at her skin. Across the clearing, Carson, the witch whose broom Manon had returned, made to kneel as well. But Manon held up a filthy, already bleeding hand. The witch halted. "Only the 13," Manon said. "We will bury them." The Kraken stared at her, and Manon ripped away the ancient soil. "We'll bury all of them." For hours, Manon and the 13 knelt in the blood-soaked earth and dug the grave. Dorian assisted Bronwyn and Glenys in drafting messages to the King and Queen of Eelway and their two sons, warning them of the danger and nothing more. No request for aid, for armies. Just before dawn, the Kraken messengers returned. Their southern kin who had summoned them here had arrived right after the massacre, too late to save the human warband or the few witches they'd sent ahead. They had flown right to Bunjali, where their four covens now aided the King and Queen of Eelway. Not that the Eelway royals seemed to need it. No. The other Kraken messenger had returned with a message from the king himself. The loss of the warband was grave indeed, but Eelway was not broken by it. Their rebels and gathered forces, while small, were still resisting Morath, still unbroken. They would continue to hold the line in the south, and would do so until their final breaths. Dorian gleaned the unwritten words, though. They did not have a single soldier to spare for Terrasen. After what he'd seen, Dorian was now inclined to agree. Eelway had given too much for too long. It was time for the rest of them to shoulder the burden. Dorian wondered if Manon noted the Krakens who watched her. Not with hatred, but some small degree of respect. Together, the 13 dug a massive grave, not even asking their wyverns to haul away the dirt. The sun rose, then began its descent. Slowly, the grave took form. Large enough for every fallen warrior. He had to go to Morath. Soon. Before this occurred again, before one more mass grave was dug. He couldn't endure the thought of it, worse than the thought of another collar going around his neck. Night was full overhead by the time Dorian managed to slip away. By the time he found an empty clearing, drew the marks, and plunged Damaris into earth shining with his own blood. His summons was answered quickly this time. Yet it was not Gavin who emerged shimmering from the night air. Dorian's magic flared, rallying to strike as the figure took form. As Caltaine Rompier, clad in an onyx gown and dark hair unbound, smiled sadly at him. Every word vanished from Dorian's tongue, but his magic remained swirling about him, invisible hands eager to crack bone. Not that there was any life to steal from Caltaine Rompier. Yet she still held up a slender hand, her gauzy dress and silken hair floating on a phantom wind. "I mean you no harm."
"I didn't summon you."
It was the only thing he could think to say. Caltaine's dark eyes slid toward Damaris, jutting from the circle of word marks.
"Didn't you?"
He didn't want to contemplate why or how the sword had somehow called her, not Gavin. Whether the sword had a will of its own, or whether the god who'd blessed it had orchestrated this meeting, for whatever truth it deemed necessary to show him.
"I thought you were destroyed at Morath," he rasped.
"I was."
Her face was softer than he'd ever seen it in life.
"In so many ways, I was."
Manon and Elide told him what she'd endured, what she'd done for them. He bowed his head.
"I'm sorry."
"Whatever for?"
Then the words tumbled out, spilling from where he'd kept them since the stone marshes of Eelway.
"For not seeing as I should have, for not knowing where they took you, for not helping you when I had the chance."
"Did you have the chance?"
The question was calm. Yet he could have sworn an edge sharpened in her voice. He opened his mouth to deny it. But he made himself look back at who he'd been long before the caller, before Sorsha.
I knew you were in the castle dungeon. I was content to let you rot there. And then Parrington, Erewhon, I mean, took you to Morath, and I didn't bother to wonder about it.
Shame sluiced through him.
I'm sorry, he repeated.
A crown prince who had not served his kingdom or his people. Not really. Gavin had been right. Caltain's edges shimmered. I was not wholly blameless, you know.
What happened to you in Morath is in no way your fault.
No, it wasn't, she agreed, a shadow passing over her face. But I made choices of my own in going to Rifthold last autumn, in pursuing my ambition for you, your crown. I regret some of them.
His gaze slid to her bare forearm, to the scar that lingered even in death. You saved my friends, he said,
and knelt before her.
You gave up everything to save them and get the word key away from Erewhon.
He would do the same if he could survive Morath's horrors.
I am in your debt.
Caltain stared down at where he knelt. I never had friends of my own, not as you have. I always envied you for it, you and Aelin. He lifted his head.
You know who she is?
A hint of a smile. Death has its advantages. He couldn't stop his next question.
Is it better there? Are you at peace?
I am not allowed to say, Caltain replied softly, her eyes shining with understanding. And I am not allowed to say who dwells here with me. He nodded, fighting past the tightness in his chest, the disappointment. But he cocked his head to the side.
Who forbids you from doing so?
If the 12 gods of this land were stranded in Aurelia, they certainly didn't rule over other realms. Caltain's lips curved upward. I am not allowed to say either. When he opened his mouth to ask more, she cut him off. There are other forces at work, beyond what is tangible and what is known. He glanced toward Damaris.
Other gods?
Caltain's silence was answer enough, but another time. He'd contemplated another time.
I never thought to summon you, he admitted.
You, who knew Morath's true horrors. I didn't realize. He let the words trail off as he rose to his feet. That there'd be anything left of me to summon? She finished. He winced. The key ate away much, but not everything.
Is the third one indeed at Morath, then?
She nodded gravely. Her body shimmered, fading swiftly. Though I do not know where he kept it, I wasn't ready to receive the second one before I took matters into my own hands. She ran her slender fingers over the black scar snaking down her arm. He'd never spoken to her, not really, had barely given her more than a passing glance or grimaced his way through polite conversation with her. And yet here she stood, the woman who had taken out a third of Morath, who had devoured a Volg prince from sheer will alone.
How did you do it?
He whispered.
How did you break free of its control?
He had to know. If he was walking into hell itself, if it was more than likely he'd wind up with a new collar around his throat, he had to know. Caltain studied his neck before she met his stare. Because I raged against it. Because I did not feel that I deserved the collar. The truth of her words slammed into him, as surely as if she'd shoved his chest. Caltain only asked, You drew the summoning marks for a reason. What is it you wish to know? Dorian tucked away the truth she'd thrown at him, the mirror she'd held up to all he'd once been and had become. He had not been a true prince,
not in spirit, not in deeds. He tried to be, but too late. He had acted too late. He doubted he was doing much better as king. Certainly not when he'd dismissed Otterlin out of his own guilt and anger, questioned whether it should be saved. As if there were ever a possibility that it didn't deserve to be. He asked at last, "Am I ready to go to Morath?" She alone would know. Had witnessed things far worse than any Manon or Elide had beheld. Kaltane again glanced to Damaris.
"You know the answer."
"You won't try to convince me not to go?"
But Kaltane's mouth tightened as her onyx gown began to blend into the gathered night.
"You know what you will face there. It is not for me to tell you if you are ready."
His mouth went dry. Kaltane said, "Everything you have heard about Morath is true.
True.
And still, there is more that is worse than you can imagine. Stay to the keep. It is Erewhon's stronghold, and likely the only place he would trust to store the key."
Dorian nodded, his heart beginning to hammer. "I will."
She took a step toward him, but halted as her edges rippled further.
"Don't linger too long, and don't attract his attention.
He is arrogant, and wholly self-absorbed, and will not bother to look too closely at what might creep through his halls."
"Be quick, Dorian."
A tremor went through his hands, but he balled them into fists.
"If I can kill him, should I take the chance?"
"No."
She shook her head.
"You would not walk away from it.
He has a chamber deep in the keep. It is where he stores the collars. He will bring you there if he catches you."
He straightened. "I..."
"Go to Morath, as you have planned. Retrieve the key and nothing more, or you will find yourself with a collar around your neck again." He swallowed.
"I can barely shift."
Kaltane gave him a half smile as she dissolved into the moonlight.
"Can't you?"
And then she was gone. Dorian stared at the place she'd stood. The word marks already vanished. Only Damaris remained standing there, witness to the truth it had somehow sensed he needed to hear. So Dorian felt for that tangle in his magic, the place where raw power eddied and emerged as whatever he wished.
"Let go,"
the shifting magic's command. "Let go of everything. Let go of the wall he'd built around himself the moment the Volg prince had invaded him, and look within, at himself. Perhaps what the sword had asked him to do in summoning Kaltane instead."
"Who do you wish to be?" "Someone worthy of my friends,"
he said into the quiet night.
"A king worthy of his kingdom."
For a heartbeat, snow-white hair and golden eyes flashed into his mind.
"Happy,"
he whispered, and wrapped a hand around Damaris's hilt. "Let go of that lingering scrap of terror." The ancient sword warmed in his hand, a friendly and swift heat. It flowed up through his fingers, his wrist, to that place within him where all those truths had dwelled, where it became warmth edged with sharpest pain. And then the world grew and expanded, the trees rising, the ground approaching. He made to touch his face, but found he had no hands, only soot-black wings, only an ebony beak that allowed no words past it. A raven. A soft inhale of air had him twisting his neck, far more easily in this form, toward the trees, toward Manon, standing in the shadows of an oak, her bloody, filthy hand braced against the trunk as she stared at him, at the transformation. Dorian fumbled for the thread of power that held him in this strange, light form. Instantly, the world was swaying, and he grew and grew back into his human body, Damaris cold and still at his feet, his clothes somehow intact. Perhaps through whatever differences existed between his raw magic and a true shifter's gift. But Manon's lip curled back from her teeth. Her golden eyes glowed like embers. "When exactly
Were you going to inform me that you were about to retrieve the third word key?
Chapter 34.
We need to retreat, Galen Ash River panted to Adian, as they stood by the water tent deep in their army's ranks, the crown prince splattered with blood both red and black. 3 days of fighting in the frigid wind and snow, 3 days of being pushed northward mile by mile. Adian had the soldiers on rotation to the front lines, and those who managed to catch a few minutes of sleep returned to the fighting with heavier and heavier feet. He left the front line himself minutes ago, only after Killian had ordered him to, going so far as to throw Adian behind him, the Bane roughly passing him along until he was here, the Crown Prince of Wendlin, gulping down water by the farthest reaches of their forces. The prince's olive skin was ashen, his Ash River eyes dim, as they monitored soldiers rushing or trudging past.
We retreat here, and we stand to be chased all the way to Orinth.
Adian's raw throat ached with each word. He had never seen an army so large, even at Theralis, all those years ago. Galen handed Adian his water skin, and Adian drank deeply.
I will follow you, cousin, to however this may end. But we cannot keep this up. Not for another full night.
Adian knew that. Had realized it after the fighting had continued under cover of darkness. When the men had started asking why Aelin of the Wildfire did not burn away their enemies, did not at least give them light by which to fight, why she had vanished again. Lysandra had donned her wyvern form to battle the Ilken, but she had been forced to yield, to fall behind their lines. Good for killing Ilken, yes, but also a large target for Morath's archers and spear throwers. Ahead, too close for comfort, screams and clashing weapons rose toward the sky. Even the Fey Royal's magic was beginning to waver, their soldiers with them. Where it failed, the silent assassins lay waiting, shredding apart Volg and Ilken alike with swift efficiency. But there were only so many of them. And still no sign of Ansel of Briarcliff's additional army.
Soon,
the red-haired queen had promised with uncharacteristic graveness only hours ago. The legion with her already dwindling rapidly.
The rest of my army will be here soon.
Snarling rose nearby, cutting through the din of battle. The ghost leopard had not faltered, had barely stopped to rest.
He had to go back out, had to eat something and go back out.
Killian could maintain order for a good while, but Adian was their prince. And with Aelin nowhere in sight, it was upon him to keep the soldiers in line. Though those lines were buckling, like leaks in a dam.
The Lannis River by Peranth,
Adian murmured, as Ilias and the silent assassins shot Ilken out of the sky, their arrows easily finding their marks. Wings first, they learned the hard way. To get them out of the air, then blades to the head to decapitate fully. Or else they'd rise again, and remember who had tried to kill them.
If we retreat northward, Adian went on, get to Peranth and cross the river. We could force them to make the crossing too. Pick them off that way.
Is there a bridge?
Galen's face tightened, as one of the two remaining Volg princes sent a wave of dark power for a cluster of their soldiers. Men wilted like flowers in a frost. A blast of wind and ice answered, Selene or Endymion, maybe one of their many cousins.
No bridge big enough, but the river's frozen solid. We might cross it, then melt it.
With Aelin?
A doubtful, careful question. Adian gestured toward the source of that answering blast of magic, now warring with the Volg prince's power.
If the Fey Royals can make ice, then they can unfreeze it, right beneath Morath's feet.
Galen's turquoise eyes flickered, either at the plan or the fact that Aelin would not be the one enacting it.
Morath might see through us.
There's little other option.
From Peranth, they'd have access to more supplies, perhaps fresh troops rallying to them from the city itself. To retreat, though. Adian surveyed the lines being picked off one by one, the soldiers on their last legs. Retreat and live. Fight and die. For this resistance would founder if they kept at this. Here, on the southern plains, they'd be ended. There was no guarantee Rowan and the others would find Aelin, that Dorian and Manon might retrieve the third word key and then give them to his queen, should she get free, should she find them in this mess of a world. No guarantee how many Krokens Manon might rally, if any. With the armada spread too thin along Terrasen's coast to be of any use, only Ansel of Briarcliff's remaining forces could offer some relief. If they weren't all clean-picked bones by then. There was little choice but to hold out until they arrived. Their last allies. Because Rolf and the Mycenaeans? There was no guarantee that they would come. No word. Order the retreat, Adian said to the prince. And get word to Endymion and Selene that we'll need their power as soon as we begin to run. To throw all their magic into a mighty shield to guard their backs, while they tried to put as many miles between them and Morath as possible. Galen nodded, shoving his bloody helmet over his dark hair, and stalked through the chaotic mass of soldiers. A retreat. This soon. This fast. For all his training, the brutal years of learning and fighting and leading, this was what it had come to. Would they even make it to Perranth? The order with which the army had marched southward utterly collapsed on the flight back north. The Fey troops stayed at their rear, magic shields buckling, yet holding, keeping Morath's forces at bay by the foothills while they retreated toward Perranth. The grumbling amongst the limping, exhausted soldiers trickled past Lysandra as she trudged between them, wearing the form of a horse. She'd allowed a young man onto her back when she'd spied his guts nearly hanging out of his rent armor. For long miles, his leaking blood had warmed her sides as he lay sprawled over her. The warm trickle had long stopped. Frozen. So had he. She hadn't the heart to dislodge him, to leave his dead body on the field to be trampled. His blood had frozen him to her anyway. Each step was an effort of will, her own wounds healing faster than the soldiers around her. Many fell during the march toward Perranth. Some were picked up, hauled by their companions or strangers. Some did not rise again. The resistance was not supposed to break apart so soon. The grumbling worsened the closer to Perranth they got, despite a quick few hours of rest that first night. Where is the queen? Where is her fire? She couldn't fight as Aelin, not convincingly, and not well enough to stay alive. And when the Firebringer fought with no flame, they might know then. She has run away. Again. Two silent assassins noticed on the second night that the dead soldier still lay on Lysandra's back. They said nothing, as they gathered warm water to melt the blood and gore that had bound him to her. Then to wash her. In her Rowan mare form, she had no words to offer them, had no way to ask if they knew what she was. They treated her with kindness, nonetheless. No one made to reach for the lone horse roaming through the ramshackle camp. Some soldiers had erected tents. Many just slept beside the fires, under cloaks and jackets. Her ears were ringing. Had been ringing since the first clashing of the battle. She didn't know how she found his tent, but there it was, flaps open to the night to reveal him standing with Galen, Ansel, and Wren. The Lord of Alsbrook's brows rose as she entered, her head nearly hitting the ceiling. A horse. She was still a horse. Wren staggered toward her, despite the exhaustion surely weighing down every inch of him. Lysandra fumbled for the thread inside her, the thread back to her human body, the shimmering light that would shrink her into it. The four of them only stared as she found it, fought for it. The magic ripped the last of the strength from her. By the time she was again in her own skin,
She was already falling to the hay-covered floor. She didn't feel the cold slam into her bare skin. Didn't care as she collapsed to her knees. Ansel was already there, slinging her cloak around her.
Where the hell have you been?
Even the Queen of the Wastes was pale, her wine-red hair plastered to her head beneath the dirt and blood. Lysandra had no speech left in her, could only kneel, clutching the cloak.
We move an hour before dawn, Adian said, the order a clear dismissal.
Ansel and Galen nodded, peeling out of the tent. Ren only murmured,
I'll find you some food, lady,
before he exited the tent. Boots crunched in hay, and then he was knee to knee before her. Adian. There was nothing kind on his face, no pity or warmth. For a long minute, they only stared at each other. Then the prince growled softly.
Your plan was bullshit.
She said nothing, and couldn't stop her shoulders from curving inward.
Your plan was bullshit,
he breathed, his eyes sparking.
How could you ever be her, wear her skin and think to get away with it? How could you ever think you'd get around the fact that our armies are counting on you to burn the enemy to ashes, and all you can do is run away and emerge as some beast instead?
You don't get to pin this retreat on me, she rasped.
The first words she'd spoken in days and days.
You agreed to let Aelin go to her death and leave us here to be slashed to bloody ribbons. You two told no one of this plan, told none of us who might have explained the realities of this war, and that we would need a god's damned firebringer, and not an untrained, useless shapeshifter against Morath.
Blow after blow, the words landed upon her weary heart.
If you were so willing to let Aelin die, then you should have let her do it after she incinerated Erewhon's hordes.
It would not have stopped Maeve from capturing her.
If you'd told us, we might have planned differently, acted differently, and we would not be here, damn you.
She stared at the muddy hay.
Throw me out of your army, then.
You ruined everything.
His words were colder than the wind outside.
You and her.
Lysandra closed her eyes. Hay rustled. And she knew he'd risen to his feet, knew it as his words speared from above her bowed head.
Get out of my tent.
She wasn't certain she could move enough to obey, though she wished to, needed to. Fight back. She should fight back, rage at him as he lashed at her, needing an outlet for his fear and despair. Lysandra opened her eyes, peering up at him, at the rage on his face. The hatred. She managed to stand, her body bleeding in pain. Managed to look him in the eye, even as Adian said again with quiet cold,
Get out.
Barefoot in the snow, naked beneath her cloak. Adian glanced at her bare legs as if realizing it, and not caring. So Lysandra nodded, clutching Ansel's cloak tighter. And strode into the frigid night.
Where is she?
Ren asked, a mug of what smelled like watery soup in one hand, a chunk of bread in the other. The lord scanned the tent as if he would find her under the cot, the hay. Adian stared at the precious few logs burning in the brazier, and said nothing.
What have you done?
Ren breathed. Everything was about to end. Had been doomed since Maeve had stolen Aelin, since his queen and the shifter had struck their agreement. So it didn't matter what he'd said. He hadn't cared if it wasn't fair, wasn't true. Didn't care if he was so tired he couldn't muster shame at his pinning on her the blame for the sure defeat they'd face in a matter of days before Perranth's walls. He wished she'd smacked him, had screamed at him. But she had let him rage. And had walked out into the snow barefoot. He'd promised to save Terrison, to hold the lines, had done so for years. And yet this test against Morath, when it had counted,
He had failed.
He'd muster the strength to fight again, to rally his men.
He needed to sleep.
Adian didn't notice when Ren left, undoubtedly in search of the shifter with whom he was so damned enamored.
He should summon his Bane commanders, see how they thought to manage this disaster. But he couldn't.
Could do nothing but stare into that fire as the long night passed.
Chapter 35.
She had not trusted this world, this dream. The companions who had walked with her, led her here. The warrior prince with pine green eyes and who smelled of Terrasen. Him she had not dared to believe at all. Not the words he spoke, but the mere fact that he was there. She did not trust that he'd removed the mask, the irons. They had vanished in other dreams, too. Dreams that had proved false. But the little folk had told her it was true. All of this. They had said it was safe, and she was to rest, and they would look after her. And that terrible, relentless pressure writhing in her veins? It had eased. Just enough to think, to breathe, and act beyond pure instinct. She'd siphoned off as much as she dared, but not all. Certainly not all. So she had slept. She'd done that too in those other dreams, had lived through days and weeks of stories that then washed away like footprints in the sand. Yet when she opened her eyes, the cave remained, dimmer now. The thrumming power had nestled deeper, slumbering. The ache in her ribs had faded, the slice down her forearm had healed, but the scab remained, the only mark on her. Aelin prodded it with a finger. Dull pain echoed in response. Smooth. Not the scab, but her finger. Smooth like glass as she rubbed the pads of her thumb and forefinger together. No calluses. Not on her fingers, on her palms. Utterly blank, wiped of the imprint from the years of training or the urine and dovier. But this new scab, this faint throbbing beneath it, that remained at least. Curled on the rock floor, she took in the cave. The white wolf lay at her back, snoring softly. Their sphere of transparent flame still burned around them, easing the strain ember by ember, but not wholly. Aelin swallowed, tasting ash. Her magic opened an eye in response. Aelin sucked in a breath, not here, not yet. She whispered it to the flame. Not yet. But the flame around her and the wolf flared and thickened, blotting out the cave. She clenched her jaw. Not yet, she promised it. Not until it could be done safely, away from them. Her magic pushed against her bones, but she ignored it, leashed it. The bubble of flame shrunk, protesting, and grew transparent once more. Through it, she could make out a water-carved basin, the slumbering forms of her other companions. The warrior prince slept only a few feet from the edge of her fire, tucked into an alcove in the cave wall. Exhaustion lay heavy upon him, though he had not disarmed himself. A sword hung from his belt, its ruby smoldering in the light of her fire. She knew that sword. An ancient sword, forged in these lands for a deadly war. It had been her sword, too. Those erased calluses had fit its hilt so perfectly. And the warrior prince now bearing it had found the sword for her. In a cave like this one. Full of the relics of heroes long since sent to the afterworld. She studied the tattoo snaking down the side of his face and neck, vanishing into his dark clothes.
I am your mate.
She had wanted to believe him. But this dream, this illusion she'd been spun. Not an illusion. He had come for her. Rowan. Rowan Whitethorn. Now Rowan Whitethorn Galathinius, her husband and king consort, her mate. She mouthed his name. He had come for her. Rowan. Silently,
so smoothly that not even the white wolf awoke. She sat up, a hand clutching the cloak that smelled of pine and snow. His cloak, his scent woven through the fibers. She rose to her feet, legs sturdier than they'd been. A thought had the bubble of flame expanding as she crossed the few feet toward the sleeping prince. She peered down at his face, handsome and yet unyielding. His eyes opened, meeting hers as if he'd known where to find her even in sleep. An unspoken question arose in those green eyes.
Aelin?
She ignored the silent inquiry, unable to bear opening that silent channel between them again, and surveyed the powerful lines of his body, the sheer size of him. A gentle wind kissed with ice and lightning brushed against her wall of flame, an echo of his silent inquiry. Her magic flared in answer, a ripple of power dancing through her, as if it had found a mirror of itself in the world, as if it had found the counter melody to its own song. Not once in those illusions or dreams had it done that. Had her own flame leaped in joy at his nearness, his power. He was here. It was him, and he'd come for her. The flame melted into nothing but cool cave air. Not melted, but rather sucked inside herself, coiling, a great beast straining at the leash. Rowan. Prince Rowan. He sat up slowly, a stillness settling over him. He knew. He'd said it to her earlier before she'd let oblivion claim her.
I am your mate.
They must have told him then.
Their companions?
Elide and Lorkin and Gavriel. They'd all been on that beach where everything had gone to hell. Her magic surged, and she rolled her shoulders, willing it to sleep, to wait just a while longer. She was here. They were both here. What could she ever say to him, to explain it, to make it right? That he'd been used so foully, had suffered so greatly because of her. There was blood on him. So much blood, soaking into his dark clothes. From the smears on his neck, the arcs under his fingernails, it seemed he'd tried to wash some off. But the scent remained. She knew that smell. Who it belonged to. Her spine tightened, her limbs tensing. Working past her clenched jaw, she inhaled sharply. Forced a long breath out through her teeth. Forced herself to work past the scent of Cairn's blood. What it did to her. Her magic thrashed, howling. And she made herself say to him, to her prince who smelled of home,
Is he alive?
Cold rage flickered across Rowan's eyes.
No.
Dead. Cairn was dead. The tautness in her body eased just slightly. Her flame, too, banked.
How?
No remorse dimmed his face.
You once told me at Mistward that if I ever took a whip to you, then you'd skin me alive.
His eyes didn't stray from hers as he said with lethal quiet,
I took it upon myself to bestow that fate on Cairn on your behalf. And when I was done, I took the liberty of removing his head from his body, then burning what remained.
A pause, a ripple of doubt.
I'm sorry I didn't give you the chance to do it yourself.
She didn't have it in her to feel a spark of surprise, to marvel at the brutality of the vengeance he'd exacted. Not as the words sank in. Not as her lungs opened up once again.
I couldn't risk bringing him here for you to kill.
Rowan went on, scanning her face.
Or risk leaving him alive, either.
She lifted her palms, studying the unmarked, empty skin. Cairn had done that. Had shredded her apart so badly they needed to put her back together again. Had wiped away all traces of who and what she'd been, what she'd seen and endured. She lowered her hands to her sides.
I'm glad, she said,
and the words were true. A shudder went through Rowan, and his head dipped slightly.
Are you...
He seemed to grapple with the right word.
Can I hold you?
The stark need in his voice ripped at her, but she stepped back. She scanned the cave, blocking out the way his eyes guttered at her retreat. Across the chamber, the great lake flowed, smooth and flat as a black mirror.
I need to bathe,
she said, her voice low and raw, even if there wasn't a mark on her beyond dirty feet.
I need to wash it away,
she tried again. Understanding softened his eyes. He pointed with a tattooed hand to the trough nearby.
There are a few extra cloths for you to wash with.
Dragging a hand through his silver hair, longer than she'd last seen it. In this world, this truth, at least. He added,
I don't know how, but they also found some of your old clothes from Mistward and brought them here.
But words were becoming distant again, dissolving on her tongue. Her magic rumbled, pressing against her blood, squeezing her bones. Out, it howled, out.
Soon,
she promised. Now, it thrashed. Her hands trembled, curling as if she could keep it in. So she turned away, aiming not toward the trough, but the lake beyond. The air stirred behind her, and she felt him following. When Rowan gleaned where she intended to bathe, he warned,
That water is barely above freezing, Aelin.
She just dropped the cloak onto the black stones and stepped into the water. Steam hissed, wafting around her in billowing clouds. She kept going, embracing the water's bite with each step, even if it failed to pierce the heat of her. The water was clear, though the gloom veiled the bottom that sloped away as she dove under the frigid surface. The water was silent, cool and welcome and calm. So Aelin loosened the leash, only a fraction. Flame leapt out, devoured by the frigid water, consumed by it. It pulled away that pressure, that endless fog of heat, soothed and chilled until thoughts took form. With each stroke beneath the surface, out into the darkness, she could feel it again. Herself, or whatever was left of it. Aelin. She was Aelin Ashriver Whitethorn Galathinius, and she was Queen of Terrasen. More magic rippled out, but she held her grip. Not all, not yet. She had been captured by Maeve, tortured by her, tortured by Cairn, her sentinel. But she had escaped, and her mate had come for her, had found her, just as they had found each other despite centuries of bloodshed and loss and war. Aelin. She was Aelin, and this was not some illusion, but the real world. Aelin. She swam out into the lake, and Rowan followed the jutting lip of stone along the shore's edge. She dropped beneath the surface, letting herself sink and sink and sink, toes grasping only open, cool water, straining for a bottom that did not arrive. Down into the dark, the cold. The ancient icy water pulled away the flame and heat and strain, pulled and sucked and waved it off. Cooled that burning core of her until she took form, a blade red hot from the fire plunged into water. Aelin. That's who she was. That lake water had never seen sunlight, had flowed from the dark, cold heart of the mountains themselves. It would kill even the most hardened of Fey warriors within minutes. Yet there was Aelin, swimming as if it were a sun-warmed forest pool. She treaded water, dipping her head back every now and then to scrub at her hair. He hadn't realized that she was burning so hotly until she stepped into the frigid lake, and steam had risen. Silently, she'd dove in, swimming beneath the surface, the water so clear he could see every stroke of her faintly glowing body. As if the water had peeled away the skin of the woman and revealed the blazing soul beneath. But that glow faded with each passing breath she emerged to take, dimming further each time she plunged beneath the surface.
Had she wished for him not to touch her because of that eternal inferno? Or simply because she first wanted to wash away the stain of Cairn? Perhaps both. At least she'd begun speaking, her eyes clearing a bit. They remained clear as she treaded water, the glow still barely clinging, and peered up at where he stood on a sliver of black rock jutting into the lake.
You could join me,
she said at last. No heat in her words. Yet he felt the invitation. Not to taste her body the way he yearned to, needed to in order to know she was here with him, but rather to be with her.
Unlike you,
he said, trying to steady his voice as the recognition on her face threatened to buckle his knees.
I don't think my magic would warm me so well if I got in.
He wanted to, though. Gods, he wanted to leap in. But he made himself add,
This lake is ancient. You should get out.
Before something came creeping along. She did no such thing, her arms continuing their sweeping circles in the water. Aelin only stared at him again in that grave, cautious way.
I didn't break,
she said quietly. His heart cracked at the words.
I didn't tell them anything.
She didn't say it for praise, to boast, but rather to tell him, her consort, of where they stood in this war. What their enemies might know.
I knew you wouldn't,
he managed to say.
She
tried to convince me that this was the bad dream. When Cairn was done with me, or during it, I don't know. She tried to worm her way into my mind. She glanced around the cave, as if she could see the world beyond it. She spun fantasies that felt so real. She bobbed under the surface. Perhaps she'd needed the cooling water of the lake to be able to hear her own voice again. Perhaps she needed the distance between them so she could speak these words. She emerged, slicking back her hair with a hand.
They felt like this.
Half of him didn't want to know. But he asked,
What sort of illusions?
A long pause.
It doesn't matter now.
Too soon to push, if ever. Then she asked softly,
How long?
It took the entirety of his 3 centuries of training to keep the devastation, the agony for her from his face.
2 months, 3 days, and 7 hours.
Her mouth tightened, either at the length of time or the fact that he'd counted every single one of those hours apart. She ran her fingers through her hair, its strands floating around her in the water. Still too long for 2 months to have passed. They healed me after each session, so that I stopped knowing what had been done and what was in my mind and where the truth lay. Erase her scars, and Maeve stood a better chance at convincing her none of this was real. But the healers couldn't remember how long my hair was. Or Maeve wanted to confuse me further. So they grew it out. Her eyes darkened at the memory of why, perhaps, they had needed to regrow her hair in the first place.
Do you want me to cut it back to the length it was when I last saw you?
His words were near guttural.
No.
Ripples shivered around her.
I want it so I can remember.
What had been done to her. What she'd survived and what she had protected. Even with all he'd done to Cairn, the way he'd made sure the male was kept alive and screaming throughout. Rowan wished the male were still breathing, if only so he could take longer killing him. And when he found Maeve, that was not his kill. He'd ended Cairn and didn't regret it. But Aelin, Maeve was hers. Even if the woman treading water before him didn't seem to have vengeance on her mind. Not so much as a hint of the burning rage that fueled her. He didn't blame her. Knew it would take time. Time and distance to heal the internal wounds. If they could ever really heal at all. But he'd work with her. Help her in whatever way he could. And if she never returned to who she had been before this, he would not love her any less. Aelin dunked her head, and when she emerged, she said,
Maeve was about to put a Vogue collar around my neck. She left to retrieve it.
The scent of her lingering fear drifted toward him, and Rowan lurched a step closer to the water's edge.
It's why I got away. She had me moved to the army camp for safekeeping, and I...
Her voice stalled, yet she met his stare. Let him read the words she could not say, in that silent way they'd always been able to communicate.
Escape wasn't my intention.
No, Fireheart. He breathed, shaking his head, horror creeping over him.
There was no collar.
She blinked, head angling.
That was a dream, too?
His heart cracked as he struggled for the words, made himself voice them.
No. It was real, or Maeve thought it was, but the collars, the Vogue presence, it was a lie that we crafted, to draw Maeve out, hopefully away from you and Doranell.
Only the faint lapping of water sounded.
There was no collar?
Rowan lowered himself to his knees and shook his head.
Aelin, if I'd known what she'd do with the knowledge, what you'd decide to do...
He might have lost her. Not from Maeve or the gods or the lock, but from his own damned choices, the lie he'd spun. Aelin drifted beneath the surface again.
So deep that when the flare happened, it was little more than a flutter. The light burst from her, rippling across the lake, illumining the stones, the slick ceiling above. A silent eruption. His breathing turned ragged. But she swam toward the surface again, light streaming off her body like tendrils of clouds. It had nearly vanished when she emerged.
I'm sorry,
he managed to say. Again, that angle of the head.
You have nothing to be sorry for.
He did, though. He'd added to her terror, her desperation.
If you had not planted that lie for Maeve, if she had not told me, I don't think we'd be here right now,
she said. He tried to rein in the twisting in his gut, the urge to reach for her, to beg for her forgiveness, tried and tried. She only asked,
what of the others?
She didn't know. Couldn't know how and why and where they'd all parted ways. So Rowan told her, as succinctly and calmly as he could. When he finished, Aelin was quiet for long minutes. She stared out into the blackness, the rippling of her treading water the only sound. Her body had nearly lost that freshly forged glow. Then she pivoted back toward him.
Maeve said you and the others were in the north,
that you'd been spotted by her spies there. Did you plant that deception for her too? He shook his head.
Lysandra has been thorough, it seems.
Aelin's throat bobbed.
I believed her.
It sounded like a confession, somehow. So Rowan found himself saying,
I told you once that even if death separated us, I would rip apart every world until I found you.
He gave her a slash of a smile.
Did you really believe this would stop me?
She pursed her mouth, and at last those agonizing emotions began to surface in her eyes.
You were supposed to save Terrasen.
Considering that the sun shines, I'd say Erewhon hasn't won yet. So we'll save it together.
He didn't let himself think of the final cost of destroying Erewhon. And Aelin seemed in no hurry to discuss it either, as she said.
You should have gone to Terrasen.
It needs you.
I need you more.
He didn't balk from the stark honesty roughening his voice.
And Terrasen will need you too. Not Lysandra masquerading as you, but you.
A shallow nod. Maeve raised her army. I doubt it was only to guard me while she was away. He'd put the thought aside to consider later.
It might just be to shore up her defenses. Should Erewhon win across the sea?
Do you truly think that's what she plans to do with it?
No,
he admitted.
I don't.
And if Maeve meant to bring that army to Terrasen,
to either unite with Erewhon or simply be another force battering their kingdom, to strike when they were weakest. They had to hurry. Had to get back. Immediately. His mate's eyes shone with the same understanding and dread.
Aelin's throat bobbed as she whispered, "I'm so tired, Rowan."
His heart strained again.
"I know, Fireheart."
He opened his mouth to say more, to coax her onto land so he might at least hold her if words couldn't ease her burden. But that's when he saw it. A boat, ancient and every inch of it carved, drifted out of the gloom.
"Get back to shore."
The boat wasn't drifting. It was being tugged. He could just barely make out two dark forms slithering beneath the surface. Aelin didn't hesitate, yet her strokes remained steady as she swam for him. She didn't balk at the hand he extended, and he wrapped his cloak around her while the boat ambled past. Black, eel-like creatures about the size of a mortal man pulled it. Their fins drifted behind them like ebony veils, and with each propelling sweep of their long tails, he glimpsed milky white eyes. Blind. They led the flat-bottomed vessel large enough for 15 fey males right to the edge of the lake. A flash of short, spindly bodies through the dimness. And the little folk had it moored to a nearby stalagmite. The others must have heard his order to Aelin, because they emerged, swords out. A foot behind them, Elid lingered with Fenris, the male still in wolf form.
"They can't mean for us to take that into the caves," Lorcan murmured.
But Aelin turned toward them, hair dripping onto the stone at her bare feet. Half a thought from her could have had her dry, yet she made no move to do so. "We're being hunted."
"We know that,"
Lorcan shot back. And were it not for the fact that Aelin was currently allowing him to rest a hand upon her shoulder, Rowan would have thrown the male into the lake. But Aelin's features didn't shift from that graveness, that unruffled calm. "The only way to the sea is through these caves." It was an outrage.